You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Yep, and don't expect anybody from the council here today because it's not. We're not going to say nasty things about them because we love them. But I can tell you that they have been providing this forum for all kinds of things, and today it's a real important one. I know that you heard me talk about this a couple of weeks ago, and we talked to a couple of fishermen, a couple of charter guys, a couple of commercial guys, and, of course, a lot of guys at the auction about billfish. And science is suggesting that a lot of the billfish in the greater part of the Pacific Ocean are not endangered or threatened or anything else. They're just fish, and we can go catch them. And if you are a person that catches fish somewhere and sells them, somewhere along the line, you've heard of Garden and Valley Isle Seafood Incorporated. They've been around for a long time, and they are, in my opinion, the premier fish handler in Hawaii. And that means that what they do is they get fish from fishermen, from the fish auction, and they pair it with orders for their customers. And some of those customers are 2,500 to 3,000 miles away, which is all good when you take a look at it. And one of the things that we wanted to make sure that you knew, and we got Bob Fram with us. He is the president of the organization, I'm guessing, because he looks like he's the president. Is that right?
Yes, sir, it is.
Okay, good. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Mike.
I hope your ears aren't burning, because we have talked about you over the years in the past, because everybody wants to know how this whole thing works. And they do know that, you know, we're this little overregulated long-line fleet of 130 whatever boats it is, and there's thousands of them in the Pacific, and yet we're really regulated. And I'm guessing maybe, and I really think our audience would really love to hear how a company like yours decides what fish to buy and then who to sell it to. So let's start with that. You started actually in the prawn business.
Yes, 1981, yeah. Alan Rito had a farm in Kilauea on Kauai, yeah. And he flew a little tiny cooler over on Royal Hawaiian Airlines to me, yeah. And it had these big, beautiful prawns, and I'll be darned to say, yeah, that it was amazing. I took it to 15 of the best restaurants, and almost 10 of them gave me an order for this new aquaculture. Yeah. Back then, it was brand new.
For those that didn't know, how big were you concentrating? What size?
The size that sold in the prawns?
Yeah, yeah.
They were the ones that all the chefs liked and wanted were about, I'd say, 7 to 8 count per pound.
Per pound. Okay,
yes.
So that's a nice prawn.
Yes,
nice,
and it had the long blue pinchers. It was the macrobrachium. It was a new foray into aquaculture for, yeah, the state of Hawaii.
And was it a natural? It seemed to me like we didn't have them, right?
Nobody was doing anything in aquaculture in Hawaii at the time. So it was an immediate hit with the chefs, this beautiful aqua blue animal with long blue pinchers. And it was raised in Hawaii. Just the story sold it. But it was also tasted a little bit lobster-like. Mm-hmm. It was a little different than a shrimp in the ocean.
We learned a couple of months ago from a guy from Chesapeake Bay, that oysters, all of the oysters in the U.S. are kind of the same, but they all taste different because they taste like where they come from.
Yes.
You know, and so is that the prawns, they process a lot of weird stuff too, right?
Well,
but they have a system. So the prawn meat is terrific, but the prawn is a bottom feeder, right?
Yes. You hit the nail on the head, Mike. Alan Rito's farm was plastic lined, so he infused fresh ocean water with some well water that was really clean, and his animals were clean and pure tasting.
Yeah, yeah.
If they had a muddy bottom, they had a little bit of a muddy taste. Yeah, so depending on what farm you got them from, they did taste different.
Okay, so anyway, you sort of went along in that. And one of the reasons why I think it's amazing, you talk about the 10 out of the 15 first restaurants said, okay, we'll try it. And obviously the customers liked it, and that was a good thing. But nowadays, you've got this demand by restaurants. I mean, look at the culinary delights that you can get in Hawaii right now. And if I'm going to spend $200 on a dinner at the Eating House or at Nobu's or whatever, it better be really good. So isn't that what your customer says? Hey, Bob, I only want the best.
Our company's reputation is built on quality, consistency, and a neat variety. If we don't spur the chef's culinary side, we get nowhere. Like right now, the Kualoa oysters are a huge hit, magnificent product. If you're talking about something from around the world, our Spanish octopus is amazing, you know, ocean trout from Scotland. But Hawaii's product, the deep water amaebi, of course, all the local fish, you know, it's special. Yeah. And the chefs want to feature as much local as they can.
And that being said, and we're going to do the pendulum swing here in a minute to talk about marlin and billfish in general. But I think that what you need to know is, we may not be the biggest landing port in the U.S. for fish, But quality-wise, and this is because you out there listening, you really demand a level of quality and freshness. You don't mind paying a lot of good money for your food, but you want it to taste good. So I guess everybody's reputation in your business is only as good as the last box of fish you sent me.
You know what? That is so true, Mike. With the auction system, quality is rewarded, and older or mishandled fish is not even sold. It's hard to get someone to buy it. So when you look at Hawaii, and this is why we're so well-known around the world, and that's why this issue is so big, we're known for everything sashimi grade.
Yeah.
And when you say that, that means the freshness for grill grade carries days later. And that is the basis of our fishery, and that's the basis of our company.
How many people ask you this question now that it seems to be pretty popular nationwide and internationally, the big poke bowl thing? It's like now you can get a poke bowl in Detroit. I mean, however, when you get a poke bowl in Hawaii, your fish is probably a little bit newer than the one that's in Detroit. Is that right?
Yes, and
not frozen, maybe.
The frozen treated poke cubes done in Asia have done something wonderful. In one hand, they've allowed cities way far from the ocean to get something trucked in, and with a little frozen cube, provided it's healthy, it doesn't have any hepe or something, with sesame seed oil, onions, and maybe shoyu and Hawaiian salt, it's a pretty darn good little dish. And with that, you know, everyone's tried it. Once they take a little taste of the frozen next to the fresh,
the level of
confidence changes.
Here's another thing that I'm sure you get a kick out of. And we've talked, my audience and I've talked this over for years. And that is everybody's, with the wasabi and the shoyu and everything else. And, I mean, a tennis shoe would taste good if the sauce is good enough. But nobody knows why there is wasabi. And they don't know this horseradish. It goes back to England, right? And you eat horseradish to get the heebie-jeebies out of the roast raw beef that you're eating. So the wasabi is not for flavor. It's to make sure that bite is a healthy bite. I never knew that before. I was told by Roy that, it's not all about the sauce. And the more discerning poke eater doesn't use wasabi or shoyu.
Yes.
They eat the fish and then they have a little ginger or whatever with you, right?
We found out a long time ago with a poke kit that we sell, 5 pounds a cube, with a pre-measured amount of sesame seed oil, inamona, Hawaiian salt, green and red onions. But the sesame seed oil, that style of poke, doesn't hide or mask the color.
Yeah,
and when you're talking about fresh local color, they
want
to see it. And the local eyes now can kind of tell that flawless Play-Doh phony red from that slightly altering real fresh ahi look.
Interestingly enough, everybody, remember 2 weeks ago when we were talking with Dave Carrera of the Wicked Tuna Show, these guys, and I guess Bob, guys like you and others must really appreciate what those guys go through, even though it's drama and it's a reality show. The bottom line is they know just as much as we do about taking good care of their fish.
Yeah, that show, Wicked Tuna.
Yeah, yeah.
There are funny sidebars where you see it rough water and then one scene it's smooth. It's slightly doctored, the onboard fish handling is everything. It's everything that Hawaii stands for, because if you ice a big 100-pound tuna, technically you need 300 pounds of ice. At least three times the weight of the fish. And if
everybody, write that down. Bob Pram said, and trust me, if you don't throw away ice at the end of a fishing trip, you didn't have enough ice.
Very true.
Yeah.
Huge mistake. And,
I
hate to say it, I've had friends, and everybody gets greedy. You get in a run. You got a 100-pound gorilla eye, then you get a 120. Mm-hmm. Your instinct is go back to that buoy and hit it again.
Yeah.
But I implore fishermen, if you've only got 200 pounds of ice, call it a day.
Yeah, exactly.
You got 200-pound tunas. You need to call ahead and have the son or the wife come to the dock with another 200 pounds of ice,
okay, let's find out from the man who's every single time he buys something, depends on where it's going to go and how much it's going to sell for. What determines the price of a fish besides just the seasonal demand of the fish? What are the benchmarks?
When we walk down to the auction, our buyer, Cliff Yamauchi, close to 20 years with us, my son's been helping out on the whitefish buying, and Tipasa's Cliff's assistant. He's looking for fish specifically for our pars. We move so many hundreds of pounds of 1+, so many thousands of pounds of 2+. And he's looking at that fish like, if we bury this in ice, can we cut it tomorrow and have the same quality?
Gotcha.
Can we cut it the next day? And we traditionally set market price on a lot of fish because we may be paying a little bit more, But if we know it's got legs, if it's got 5 to 6 days of H&G shelf life beautiful, it allows us to have continuity of supply.
Gotcha.
And that helps us with our outer island. We have a team on Maui, a team in Kauai and on Kona, and they count on the blocks fish. They get beautiful local fish, don't get me wrong.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But the, you know, the, those outer island small boats don't get opa, they don't get sword, they don't get manchong, and they get something overwhelmingly too much for 1 week and nothing.
And nothing the next.
Yeah.
Yeah, we wish we could flip the switch for all of y'all and solve that, but that's not going to happen. However, I can tell you another thing, and this you've heard on the show many, many times. When we talk to the auction, now we have a chance to talk to Bob Fram, and we're going to tell you a little bit where they are and how you can go look at the website for Garden and Valley Isle Seafood in Cork. But however, here is the thing. Unlike every single other district in the council, we are different because a lot of us, we don't think we're commercial, but we kind of are. Maybe you trade, you know, you trade with a farmer, you trade with a friend. The minute you do that, you're kind of commercial. And some things, sometimes I know, and I want to get to the marlin thing. When I was fishing commercially, Bob, and you know this, marlin, if you could get $1.50 a pound, that was a lot of money.
Yeah.
So obviously, most of it ended up getting smoked or getting cooked or getting given away. But the demand... The marlin is a pretty good fish. Now, it's not sashimi-grade ahi, but it's sashimi-grade marlin.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, for sure.
You know, some of the most beautiful brunches at our local properties, from Kahala Resort to the Prince Hotel, these are a lot of good guys, Turtle Bay Hotel. They love to feature brilliant candy apple translucent red ahi next to a row of nice kajiki, which is a whitish pink.
Exactly.
And the crowd loves it. And you know what I get, Mike, from a lot of people eating that kajiki? They go, what is this whitefish? Well, they know I'm the expert. They expect me to know. And I look one glance at it, and they go, it's hamachi, right? I go,
no, this is
kajiki blue marlin, and it's like a little subtle flavor compared to tuna, and it has a real similar buttery smooth texture.
You've been through the ups and downs of the mercury scare for years.
Oh, yeah.
And then I remember finding out from a professor up at UH on this program years ago that you'd have to eat a pound of sashimi a day for about 10,000 years to have a mercury problem. Wasn't that a real issue for the market for a long time?
Yes. And you know, the real sad thing on top of that, from the knowledge you had, not only did you have to eat a lot of marlin, it had to be a large, older marlin.
Exactly.
Which doesn't go sashimi. Yeah. You know, they kind of turn grayish.
Yeah.
They get smoked. But what's interesting, if you smoke a big gray-blue marlin at 400 pounds, and you have those beautiful teriyaki stick-sized pieces of marlin, and you put that in your chest freezer, you share with your friends, that would be, by the federal old law, enough to give you mercury. And you know what? We've had zero mercury poisons. Yeah. It hasn't occurred.
Yeah.
So you really have to make it your whole protein for about 2 years straight, an old shark, an old marlin, or maybe eat some whale meat for a year straight.
Yeah. So,
and then
so
you
gang,
get mercury.
So, gang, take it from the experts. That's just the way it is. Now, however, I want to make this transition because I think we need to do this. All of a sudden, just demand alone and different ways of presenting and everything else created a market for marlin that didn't used to exist. So you can get some pretty good money for marlin that's in good shape. Now, I know, and you can explain to people why they can't get it right out of the ocean and bring it straight down to the processor and expect that it's going to be at the right temperature. You have to take care of that fish.
Yes. All the big fish, tunas, marlins in particular, they're histamine, which means if you throw a wet towel on them and you holo drink your Heineken and drive around for another 4 to 6 hours and you bring it in, it'll still look blue and beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you buy ice, you could actually kill somebody with that fish.
Yeah, it's so amazing.
Time and temperature, every minute that fish is dead, it has to start getting colder by the second.
Yeah.
And if it does that, you have a healthy fish.
Now, all that being put aside, we have this wonderful marketplace for our billfish from the Hawaiian Islands.
Yeah.
And I do know that there's all kinds of things going on. And right now, in particular, and we're going to get you all to relax, to react on this, by contacting your local representatives and senators, by contacting our congressional members. We're talking to Senators Hirono and Schatz, Congresswomen Hanabusa and Gabbard. We really need to get this out there. It's not about money. It's about lifestyle. And it's about a lot of things. And there is no reason why most of the billfish that we catch can't be shared with people on the mainland. So, Bob, talk about the demand. How many people? It's not you trying to schlep something. It's somebody calling you up and say, can we get some marlin?
Yes. You know, the main thing that they buy from us as a company all across the mainland, wholesalers that do restaurant distribution and retail to really nice stores, they want the tuna, but they need color and they need variety.
Right.
And the blue marlin in the case looks beautiful. We've assured them that our marketplace is striving for one thing, sashimi grade.
Yeah, yeah.
When they see sashimi grade blue marlin in their case, they are literally astounded.
Sure.
Then they ask their seafood expert or their chef, how are you serving it? Poke bowls, sliced sashimi, seared like blackened ahi, and of course, just grilling it.
Yeah.
And the beauty of a grilled marlin is you're talking 2 minutes aside max,
yeah,
and you're ready
so
to eat.
Great.
So you don't.
Yeah,
I tell people who are going to eat blue marlin seared on the grill, get everything ready, get everybody seated, take the steaks out, grill them a minute or two aside, and sit out. And
I'm glad to hear you call them steaks because that's what they are.
Yeah.
And there's I don't eat much red meat. I mean, I eat a lot of red fish, plenty of it. And it's made a big difference for me, and I think for a lot of other people. But I think that let's talk about not just the socioeconomics of this, but and the good shape that it's in. For those that don't know, let's say that you go to the United Fish Agency auction tomorrow and buy a couple of marlin and maybe a shutomi and maybe some stuff, and you've got customers that are far away. How quick are you getting that piece of fish to Minnesota from Hawaii?
We have bookings made. We like to contact them and give them a snapshot of the market on, say, Monday.
Yeah.
Ideally for us, they say, you know what, midweek I'm going to need this, this, and that. That's the best scenario for us.
Perfect.
Because what it allows us to do is bid on three or four marlin on a Tuesday, Wednesday, the freight bookings Wednesday night. We may buy it and ice it Tuesday or Wednesday, but the bottom line is when we made that flight reservation, that fish is headed and gutted into the box and at the airport by 3, 4, or 5. It flies during the night, and while I'm sleeping in the morning, that wholesaler's back in his truck up at the airport. He's picking that fish up.
Now,
sometimes it's loin or H-E-G.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's make sure that people understand. It is rare that you're putting the whole fish in a box. It used to be that's the way it got done. Mm-hmm. Put the marlin, build a box, and send it. But I think that what happened is in because of quantity, portion control, consistency, and value, that they are the good restaurants and the good customers, they want processed fish. They want you to send them a slab that is all meat.
Yes. Yeah. H&G fish still travels to the wholesaler.
H&G, for those that don't know.
Headed and gutted. No head, no guts.
Yeah.
That's where they cut the marlin in half, and we can usually pit anything about under 120 in a box.
Yeah.
If it's a 200-pounder, it'll be 100-100.
Mm.
But the marlin has such a beautiful shelf life, and we get to view the meat quality by cutting and hand wrapping and packing the loins. We can fill a box with 100 pounds of fire log pieces of marlin in the log form that cuts into steaks, and they absolutely love it, and they sell it in 2 days, and they're ordering more loins, and they're only paying for what they're selling.
Yeah, see, that's the key. Now, the other side of it is, if you go to your favorite restaurant and you go for the special and the special is out, that's a good restaurant. They're buying for the right usage. They don't want extra. They don't want leftover. They want to say, well, there's only two more specials left, so if you want one, order one right now. And you feel special, don't you, when you get that special?
Yeah, you know that they're going to have new fish show up tomorrow, and if you're eating at 8:30 instead of 6:30 and they're out of the kajiki or the shutomi or the opa, then you just got there too late.
I also know that there are some guys that will leave their card and the $10 bill with the maitre d' and say, call me when the tuna gets here and hold me a table. I don't care what time or day it is, I'm coming.
The preferred customer happens, right?
Okay, now on that subject, we are importing of the seafood that we eat in Hawaii somewhere well over 90%. I mean, that includes shellfish, shrimp, and all of that other stuff, right? But when I want people to know that there are people that are going to be affected if we can't continue to sell our billfish to a demanding market on the mainland. Not just companies like yours, which obviously would take a hit if all of a sudden you had to tell your customers, I can't sell you that species anymore. We got to do this and that. Who's it going to affect the most?
You know, it's going to affect...
Besides the fishermen, of course.
If they can't make money on that fish, then all of the domino effects, and they start struggling to pay for their boats and their trips at sea. It affects all of our workers, packaging and cutting. Our orders shrink. We don't have the variety to win over a wholesaler, say, from buying instead of Ecuador or somewhere else. They say, well, Hawaii doesn't have blue marlin anymore, so we can buy stuff elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
The trickle-down effects all the way to the box supplier to me, my gel pack guy.
Yeah.
It goes all the way to my fish cutter's hours. How long do they have in that day to work? It's a chain reaction all the way down to the freight to the airlines. I mean, it affects so many things.
Yeah, and, you know, that's true. I mean, and when you talk about that and talk about job opportunities, because of the proliferation of, you know, just a booming new restaurant business in Hawaii, particularly in the resort areas, And it's come to be where these chefs are, these guys and gals are so lucky to go to culinary school here and get mentored into this, that when they bring that plate out, they operate off return business, just like you do, just like your customers keep coming back to you because you're going to give them that same level all the time. But what if happens if you can't sell it?
Oh, it's very sad. Yeah, you know, it affects everybody down the line, and especially the fact that Hawaii's taking space on the fishing boat to bring that marlin in, and then everyone's working with the fish. Yeah. It's a big hole that'll be just left, especially if there's a nice run on it.
At the last Fishers Forum, which I love to be part of every time that the council meets, they were talking about tailpipe ahi. And I guess maybe that some people don't know what that is. It's not really a very good idea. I do know that it's not just like putting the exhaust pipe from a truck into your fish, but isn't it kind of similar in some respects?
Well, you know, that's very true, because when you take any kind of carbon monoxide gas and you smoke, and a lot of smoking is very good. You know that from smoked marlin. We all know that from smoked salmon.
Sure.
And if you didn't do carbon monoxide smoking on smoked salmon, it would be brown. But it holds this beautiful orange color.
I get you.
And they figured it out quickly that same carbon monoxide gas will hold the red on tuna.
Yeah.
What I also found out, which is interesting, might make us feel a little better about it, even though I don't promote it, is you can't turn a chocolate tuna into a red tailpipe tuna. You can't use carbon monoxide
to improve it.
Yeah, you can do a light pink, and it'll come more red.
Exactly.
But brown tuna that's old, you can't recover it.
For those that don't know Bob, and by the way, Bob is from Garden Isle, Garden and Valley Isle Seafood, and you can go on the web and just Google that, Garden and Valley Isle Seafood, Inc. And their reputation hinges on you guys fishing and bringing them good fish. And that's the other thing. You have to be kind of... Almost a private investigator, don't you? To make sure that wherever you're getting your fish, if it's that color, it's because it's fresh, not because it's been hanging in the back of a truck with a exhaust pipe going into it.
Yes, very true. Yeah.
So country of origin. Mm-hmm. I do know that there are some places, and what is it? Just so it travels better and looks better. Is that the only reason?
Well, you know, cool labeling, country origin labeling, and the advent of HACCP, Hazard Analysis Critical Control Point, really put the onus on importers, I would call exporters from Asia, importers to Hawaii. They had to sell something safe to eat.
Yeah, exactly.
They had to meet certain standards, temperature. They had to have a facility that was inspected by their government and usually our government as well. So the imports have improved quite a bit. The product that's being treated, what's really scary, we've had the Hep A breakout and stuff. Those pokey cubes are so popular that the main tier facilities in Indonesia, Thailand, India, they're booked.
Yeah.
The second level is booked.
Yeah.
Because
now you're getting to the questionable facilities
doing it. So, you know, I mean, obviously I'm partial and I say buy and support local tuna, pay a little more. It's healthier. And you can tell if our tuna is not good, it immediately turns brown and stinky. A treated tuna will look really beautiful and be heavily infused with bacteria.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a scary thing.
Absolutely.
You can't see. You
know? Okay, now there's another area. And I know this is important, everybody. And you say, how can these guys at this auction know so much? Well, because there's a core sample, there's a tail cut. And these guys, I know that you're often amazed at your buyer, and I've been that way doing the tours there. They are smart guys. These guys are executives. They might be in bus-up old clothing, but they are executives. They know what they're doing.
Oh, you know, when you stand shoulder to shoulder with them for months and weeks at a time, and I bought from 84 to 89 on a Tuesday, Thursday, Friday basis. My business partner, Dave Marabella, bought, Monday,
the other
Monday
days,
Wednesday, Friday.
Because it'll kill you, right, if you try to do it every day.
First of all, I mean, I made so many bad buys on fish that I thought was good. And when it hurts your pocketbook, you learn quickly. Yeah. You better scrutinize even a little more.
Okay, I was there when they made the transition into barcoding the fish. And I remember what an important step that was that people didn't understand. When I was taking all of the tours, I took thousands of people through there over the years ago. We had breakfast at Nico's after that, and everybody had a good time. But the thing that I thought was the most impressive is, you know where the fish came from that you bought, right?
Yes.
And therefore, and this is not to spank somebody, but this is to really react quick enough to be proactive to arrest the condition before it gets worse.
Oh, you know, every boat has a quality reputation. You're already keyed up.
That's another good point. Yeah,
yeah, you're already keyed up as a buyer when the good boats are in, and you're already a little protective when it's a bad boat reputation. Now, generally, Hawaii has more, way good. Like excellent handlers, good handlers, medium handlers, and a very few have a short handling, a poor handling reputation. But those guys, they
got to learn, though.
Yeah, right? It follows them until they shake it.
Well, I must tell you, there's one guy, though, Bob, I know this for a fact, this one skipper that had a bad rep for a while. He said, what can I do to turn this around? Mm-hmm. He got some lessons, and all of a sudden he started saying to people, please try me again. And it took him months before people would trust him again. But now he realizes being penny saved is not pound, it's pound foolish, right?
Yes. Yeah. You know, we talk to captains a lot when we can. We're not tight with them. We don't own any of our own boats. Mm-hmm. But the rule of thumb is if your trips are shorter, mm-hmm. even though you may not have as much poundage, your per pound reward is much greater. Yeah. And then you've spent less fuel and you're back at the dock getting cash. Mm-hmm. And if you really get greedy and try to hit that 20,000-30,000 pound load instead of that 10, mm-hmm. I would guess that more than half the bottom, you know, the top of the load will work, the medium may not, and the bottom of the load will be bad.
I think one of the things that happens, and I've explained this and a lot of people that have called the program and we've talked about this, the tee shot to go out and go fishing now is horrific. I mean, you know, you're spending on a longline boat, you know, upwards of $15,000 just to go fishing and more. I mean, when you start looking at fuel and ice. So if you go far away, and this is why I want to bring billfish back into it. If you're selling some billfish along with the tuna, that's going to make the difference whether or not you can go to that far away or not. And that doesn't that mean a lot of jobs? But more important, a lot of fish that we want, we're not going to be able to get anymore.
Exactly. As soon as it's what's really scary about the whole thing, Mike, is almost interstate commerce law breaking. It's like if we were to tell Massachusetts, we'll never buy your clawed live Maine lobster just because we decide that we want to have more lobster in the world. That's why we're doing it. Yeah. And it's that kind of decision making that's frightening, and it has a real effect on us as a small economy. Mm. And it's one of the few things we can export.
Do you think, Bob, and this is in your official capacity now, do you think that there's enough of an argument, enough science to suggest that we are not threatened in many of the species? Maybe a little stripey problem, I don't know. But I do know that most of our blue marlin is in pretty good shape. And that must mean that if our folks react to go to Hirono and Schott and also to Tulsi Gabbard and to Colleen Hanabusa, as well as their own reps or senators, that if we cry loud enough, they're going to pay attention. Can we make sure that can this be headed off at the pass, do you think?
Well, yes. And everyone who's listening to this show that kind of has a feel for Hawaii's food culture and the small seafood industry that contributes to export, they need to call those people and feel really good about calling them, because this is not a vote against ecology green. This is a well-managed, sustainable, traceable fishery with a product. And the minute we allow this precedent to be safe, a special interest group somewhere saying this product can't be sold, it's a very bad thing for a small state like us.
And to tell the truth, I mean, you know, most of us that are either part-timers, and like I said, our audience, they may not think they're commercial, but come on, they're commercial. You sell a fish, you're a commercial fisherman. That being said, you take good care of that fish, and you take care. And remember, all of the things that we've had you do in the past, when we've cut and pasted and you send this to your Congress, don't do that. Your own words are really important. Go, you know, just Google them. You can get it in 2 seconds. You can go on the computer. You can get the Schott's, Hirono, Hanabusa. It's so easy. And Gabbard, and don't forget, just your city councilman. I mean, your state senator, the governor's office. Tell everybody, hey, I don't like this. Make sure that we have representation in Washington. They're going to fight for our rights to eat the fish we catch and to sell some to those folks on the mainland.
You know, it's so true. The oceans in the Atlantic and the Gulf were pillaged and plundered by super large nets since the
40s. And we can't do that. We can't do that.
And the Pacific is 5 times the size, and it's very healthy, and we are a managed, traceable fishery. This is a healthy U.S. flag fishery.
Okay, so people want to know a little bit more about you, Bob, and your company. Where do they go?
They can go to our webpage. We're working 6 days a week. Yeah. They can call our office and order seafood anytime they want. You know, we're really not set up for retail, so we ask people, call the day before, and we'll have it ready for
you. There you go. Hey, thanks very much, and let's hope and pray that deaf ears don't happen and we get to keep selling this fish to the mainland. Okay, if you want to hear something on the show, you know what to do. Drop me a line, themikebuckshow@gmail.com. Themikebuckshow@gmail.com. Happy fishing. See you next week. Aloha.